Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome back to the Thistle Scottish Rugby Podcast, bringing you a second pod for this Six Nations, really spoiling you in 2024. The dream was very much alive, then the dream died, and then the dream was trampled into the Roman dirt at the weekend as Scotland crashed to a loss to Italy somehow. But David, Matt and Alan, we are back to talk about that and also look ahead to the final game against Ireland and really just run the roost over what the hell has gone on in this Six Nations and answer the big question, have we thrown away our best chance to win a Six Nations? Probably for the next decade at least. But before we get into that, we'll say hello to Matt and Alan. Matt, how are you doing, pal?
Not too bad. Just that little introduction reminded me of that bit in Gladiator with Marcus Aurelius saying, there was once a dream that was Rome. You could only whisper it. Anything more than a whisper, it would vanish. Just like our Scotland's fortunes at the weekend, unfortunately.
God. That was a very cultural little reference. Did you have that quote off the top of your head?
Gladiator. We were talking about Gladiator prior to the podcast, so maybe it was on the mind.
Great knowledge.
Yeah, it's nice. Is that like your screensaver on your work computer or something like that?
Yeah, exactly. Just a photo of Marcus Aurelius, but Richard Harris is Marcus Aurelius rather than like a bust or something.
Yeah, that was very nice. So, Alan, little cameo from you there. How you doing?
Yeah, good. Really emotional sort of last couple of days. Scottish rugby. Kate Middleton. It's all been happening.
I reckon I could do a clean 20 minutes on Kate Middleton if we want to do that before we get into rugby.
No, it's late. We need to get through this.
I think we do. I just saw a theory online that she was pregnant with the baby of that guy who died about a month ago, and it's all a big cover-up for that. So the royal family have not only murdered her, but they've murdered that guy. Honestly, it's incredible.
I like it.
I'm totally and utterly here for it. But thinking of terrible things, Scotland losing to Italy somehow. I was in the car taking my little boy for a haircut. I heard the George Horn try on the radio at the start of the second half. I went in and had a blissful 20 minutes of him getting his haircut, and I came out and looked at my phone at about 150 WhatsApps, and then looked at the BBC Sports website, and the world had collapsed. Matt, what the hell happened?
I actually had a very similar viewing experience whereby, yeah, saw the horn try, stepped away, had a beer, thought everything's okay, and then obviously it wasn't.
Everything is fine.
I mean, I was just looking at the stats and thinking that, you know, after the match that the stats wouldn't look too kindly on Scotland. But if you just looked at them and didn't know the result, you'd think that Scotland won the game by miles. We had like 60% possession, slightly more territory. We ran more than double the meters of Italy, far more passes, far more runs. And even our set piece was like 100%, and our tackle rate was 90%. So it sort of thing looks like they got the basics right. But I actually think on the day, just far too many mistakes at key points, inability to control the game, particularly when we did get ahead. And the one sort of glaring stat is, once again, discipline, 12 penalties conceded versus Italy's 5, which I think just maybe sums up the day slightly, that we were inaccurate, ill-disciplined, and I guess just seemed to lack the intensity that we've had in patches during the previous games in the tournament.
Yeah, I mean, Alan, it was a scrappy start, but Scotland seemed to sort of, I guess, settle a little bit. We got our noses in front. And then I guess, well, I think we went 22-10 up at one stage. And then how did the wheels come off?
I think we were both 14-3 and 22-10 up. And good. And whilst obviously we gave away a penalty literally off the first ruck, yeah. Actually, broadly, in that sort of opening sort of 10, 12 minutes when we sort of had the ball, we looked pretty dangerous. And, you know, we actually, I felt like we were making yards pretty easily. And I think when we went 14-3 up, I thought it was actually going to be a pretty, pretty comfortable win. And yeah, I think it just, when we went 22-10 up, there was sort of a couple of key moments. So that was sort of last 5 minutes before the second half. Just really scrappy, really soft penalties. Gave away two penalties that allowed them to go 22-16 up. And then you just had in the sort of opening 5 minutes of the second half, you just had that sort of disallowed try. And it seemed like, I genuinely believe if we'd got that try and gone 27-16 up, I think we would have cruised away at that point. But there was something sort of post that try where sort of mentally, don't know whether it's sort of a lack of leadership or complacency, but they just seemed to sort of take their eye off the ball. And it just felt for about 25, 30 minutes, Scotland just weren't really even in the game, right? They were very much sort of like passengers. And ultimately, Italy sort of took control, seemed to want it a bit more ruthless. And yeah, I think the mad thing was between 30 minutes and 75 minutes, we lost 21-0. So, which against
so
Italy,
bad.
Yeah. You know, for a team which is, you know, prides itself on, you know, being a pretty good an attacking force, is pretty awful. And then even then you saw the last 5 minutes, once they sort of got their act together, again, it didn't feel like it was difficult to make yards. And just what you said, Matt, you know, in terms of meters made, defenders beaten, etc., totally wiped Italy off the park. But yeah, that sort of 45 to 75 minutes, so there was just, Scotland just could not get a grip of the match. And it was both, I think, sort of a lack of leadership and attack, and then just a constant sort of cadence of just soft penalties that just kept sort of pushing Scotland back and just sort of losing the momentum, or giving the momentum to Italy.
So exactly, almost exactly the periods that we lost our heads in Cardiff as well. But we just got away with it there.
Well, yeah. I was going to ask, do you think this has been coming, in a sense, judging by the rest of the Six Nations, that, you know, yes, we could have been 3 from 3, which would have been great. But if you think about it, really, we had that very good 50 minutes against Wales, who.
Oh my God, we were so good, and they were so bad. But
I think Wales have proven themselves to be maybe not that great aside. You know, we played okay in patches against France, but overall we're pretty poor. And while the England game was a great result, that first 25 minutes we went missing, and then you could argue, I think we played well from that point onwards, but you could argue that we sort of relied on that Doohan magic rather than an overall performance. So it's almost like our chickens coming home to roost. And I think a lot of people would say, well, Italy are an improving side, et cetera, et cetera. And I think they are. But I just don't think they're that great a team. And they've also not had, barring that France result, which was against 14 men, I don't think they've had that great a tournament. So it's pretty disappointing overall, obviously. But I wonder if it was, if the writing has been on the wall slightly.
Yeah, I mean, from that discipline perspective. I mean, just to pause on this game for a second, is it the worst Scotland loss against Italy ever, or does 2007, the intercept match, still, is that still the worst loss to Italy?
Well, I was going to say, what's worse is, is like Phil Godwin getting charged down like three times and us being 20-0, 21-0 down, and then having to sort of like fight our way back. Is that worse than being sort of 14-3, 20-10 up and then losing? It feels like this is potentially worse.
I think this is worse because also we're a lot better in 2024 than we were in 2007.
Yeah. No.
On basically every single metric available.
Agreed.
And Italy, I guess. Italy are better, but I still think the gap is still there. And so, just like with all of the context and everything that we've got now with England going on and beating Ireland, it just really is like the pits. The fact that we could have been going to Dublin with a chance to win the whole thing.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think there's the multiple
the
factors.
The context
of,
is so bad.
Yeah. The being 14-3, 22-10 up, the fact that if we'd won it, we would have had a chance at winning our first ever Six Nations. The fact that this is, you know, a fairly settled, sort of probably best group of players we've had ever in the Six Nations. I think you could then quite easily say this might be, appreciating Italy, I have got better, but this is potentially our worst ever loss in the Six Nations.
Worst ever loss in the Six Nations to Italy or total?
Yeah, I know. I don't know whether that was too aggressive. That's probably too aggressive. But because of the context, if we'd won, we would have had a shot at winning the Six Nations. If we'd won and we were 22-10 up.
We'd be on a flight to Dublin.
Yeah. Scotland would be taking over Dublin this weekend and we would inevitably lose by about 30 points. On St. Paddy's Day.
Yeah, we get
pumped. God.
But, you know, we've never had a chance to win the Six Nations. And we sort of choked.
We've never been in with a sniff.
Yeah. So, not the worst individual performance, but maybe the worst loss when you sort of take context, when you include the context.
Yeah, I think also given we've, particularly on the Townsend, like, become quite good at beating Italy. And you never want to be like 100% complacent going into it. But beforehand, I was like, I think, foolishly, I was like, I think things have changed. You know, so the most like dangerous words ever is like, this time is different. But yeah, I think that adds to the context as well.
I guess going back to, I suppose, the specifics of this game in the Six Nations, there's two examples where for half an hour in a game, this team has absolutely lost their heads. Is it a leadership thing? Is it a quality thing? Is it just are they too junior? Is there too many captains? Too many vice captains? Have you got a theory, Alan?
No, I don't.
A conspiracy or otherwise, have you got a theory?
Yeah. It was photoshopped.
I actually like that there is a theory going around that basically all of the, after the France game and all the abuse that Nick Berry got, is that all of the referees basically got together and decided to fuck over Scotland. And I'm compelled by it.
This is the thing, I would agree, but presumably the conspiracy started though with whatever that Irish guy's name was denying Scotland the try. So the real question is what have we, and to be fair, he's Irish, so remember we screwed up the Irish World Cup.
What have we stumbled upon here? Quite interesting.
This is world
wheels
rugby.
Within wheels.
This is Alan Gilpin playing the long game. He
world
he
rugby
knew.
Headquartered in Dublin as well.
Yeah,
world rugby headquartered in Dublin. They didn't want Dodson to leave on a positive note.
Couldn't handle it.
He got the refs in post Wales and said, look, we've got to sort this. But even saying that, you know.
They just couldn't let a good guy finish on a high, could they?
But I think even sort of comparing it to the Wales match, I know we sort of lost the penalty count in Italy, but I mean, that Wales second half, that sort of like, was it 17 penalties in a row we gave? I mean, that feels like sort of freak sort of. I actually think almost any team, if you're giving away 17 penalties, would be sort of struggling pretty massively. And whilst obviously we did give some soft pens, it felt probably a little bit different where we did have opportunities to kind of, I don't know, kind of try and wrestle back control, play some phases, kick to the corners more effectively. And we just weren't quite able to do that. I'm not quite sure. It did feel like in that second half, someone like a Ben White would have helped quite a lot. Yeah. And it does feel like whilst Darge hasn't been bad, we haven't quite been managing to sort of win the breakdown. And in that second half, I don't think we managed to really sort of get on top of Italy across sort of the breakdown, which is maybe a little bit of a gap for us. I feel like it's hard to place what exactly went wrong in that second half.
I know what you mean, and I think I've seen a few people questioning the dual captaincy structure, which I kind of get. Like, I think it's a bit odd, but then I think it's very difficult to pinpoint that as being the cause of the issues.
I suppose it's also, I guess if you want to keep going down that route, you've got two captains. You've got Roy Darge, who's very green captaincy-wise, and actually still sort of Scotland cap, Scotland start-wise. And Finn, who's like obviously super experienced, but he's not like a sort of ref managing captain, is he? He's like very much, I don't know. You could make the argument that even that combination.
I think he's actually been okay. I think he's been pretty good at that front. And I think he's been pretty good at just directing us around the pitch in the previous games, which is, I guess, a form of leadership.
Yeah, I do get. I know. I think he's got leadership qualities. I guess it's just like if you're in that repeating rinse and repeat cycle where it's just like penalty, 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 and the ref's clearly got a bug in his mind that Scotland are doing something. I don't know. Is Finn capable of sort of getting in there and having a proper conversation? Is Darge, who's very much like a lead by example type chap, very very stoic, doesn't he's not very gregarious. I don't know. I mean, I'm trying to find something here.
I think that's fair. Even without that though, it feels like ultimately, you know, a Ben White and a Finn Russell should have been able, if that had been, even, you know, I know it was Horn and Russell, that sort of Horn, Russell, you know, Redpath, Kinghorn axis should have been able to sort of wrestle back control, probably at some point sort of slow it down, sort of suck some of the energy out of the Italy teams and the stadium.
A hubris from Tooney dropping White?
I was surprised by that. But then I was thinking, oh, you've got those gaps in between the last games. But then obviously Ben White went back to Toulon. And I think, I'm actually not 100% sure, but maybe he was playing, or at least was back with his club. Yeah. So I kind of get it. And I think that, you know, if it was two, three years ago, Ali Price would have maybe been the guy coming in instead and playing a similar game. But I don't know what's happened to him in the last 2 years or so, but he looked pretty off the pace when he came on.
He looked very off the pace. Yeah,
he was, you know, he was getting a lot of heat on Twitter. So I think it's just kind of unfortunate that the scrum half that you do have in mind, obviously George Horn plays so well for his club, but as we talked about before, just whether his game is suited to international rugby, particularly when you need that bit of control. And I'd maybe even say the same for someone like Kinghorn at the moment, that we all know what he can do, but we know his weaknesses as well. And he made quite a lot of mistakes at the weekend, overplaying his hand quite often, when we just needed, as we said, someone to control things and win the momentum back. I think going back to that breakdown point, there was a stat around sort of top turnover winners in the tournament so far. In that top list, there's not a single Scot. I don't know what the stats are overall for turnovers, you know, breakdown penalties won, but and lost. It does feel as if we've been really lacking in that area. I don't think any of our back row players have played particularly poorly. I thought Christie was very good at the weekend, actually. But it just seems like we can't quite get the edge at the breakdown, which, you know, is massive for momentum and also obviously that penalty count.
It seems weird given his size as well, but probably missing Darcy Graham, who's our best back, Jackler. Like, none of our backs can really get turnover. You know, it's not like Hugh Jones or Redpath or Doohan or even Kinghorn. It's like getting over the ball. So you've not got much of sort of a turnover opportunity when comes out sort of to the back line as well, versus, you know, some other teams like an Aki or a Dante or someone like that who are just very good at getting over the ball.
Do you think Doohan's ever done a Jackal?
No.
Like, I don't think he... I think Finn would try it and maybe get, like, blasted off the ball. But...
Yeah.
Doohan would just be like... Maybe it's in his contract that he doesn't have to jackal.
Not for me.
I'm not sure Kinghorn's got, like, the body composition to really jackal.
Too rangy. Yeah,
something could be wrong there.
I would have thought Redpath could do a job.
I think he's okay with the ball.
He's probably all right.
He didn't have his best game at the weekend, though. Redpath.
Yeah. I think he still showed his quality, but didn't play very well, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I think he was just unfortunately part of that sort of mad 10 minutes or so after half time when we were still in the lead. And not just him, but various players made some pretty stupid mistakes around the Italian halfway line. And we were just on the back foot massively.
Question for you both. Is this Six Nations the most peaky and trophy of any Six Nations we've ever had? So you sort of had the peak of the Wales first half, the trough of the second half, the peak of the win, the France sort of peaks and troughs, the England sort of the opening start was bad and then it was just sort of this amazing peak, and then you've got the sort of Italy trough. It feels like it's just been like a real sort of extreme of highs and lows from start to finish, right?
Yeah,
never heard peaky and trophy said before. Peaky and trophy, but yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, I'm trying to think of a comparable.
I think you're right, because normally it seems as if we sort of have like a couple of quite good wins at the start, and then our tournament's kind of done by the end. But yeah, so far. Real emotional roller coaster, some might say.
Which makes me think there's only sort of two outcomes for this weekend. Either we sort of win and have a real peaky performance, or we get absolutely pumped and it's quite trophy.
I can see us also winning a game against Ireland that means nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It'd be like, fair enough, we haven't beaten them in so long, so it would mean something. But it would also be like, yeah, now the pressure's off, we... like actually put in a performance against them that doesn't result in anything. Like,
is there a are we still mathematically in the game?
Yeah,
I think we need to win by 40 points, though, right?
We're in the game
We need to win.
To win the championship.
Well, yeah, we need to win by 76 points.
Yeah.
No, well, it'd be
77 points.
No, but then they would lose, so it's half of 76 or 77. So you need to win by 38. I don't know. Anyway,
that would be extremely peaky if that were to happen.
39 points, yeah. If we win by 39 points, with a bonus point, which you'd assume.
But then deny Ireland a bonus point.
Deny Ireland a bonus point.
And Ireland and England lose to France.
So probably unlikely.
Yeah. Would be a real peak, though.
Oh, the peak. Can you believe the peak?
So peaky.
I can see us losing by 39 points.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I guess absolutely.
What would, obviously, apart from sort of Ben White, any changes?
I mean, two Pilotas out for the whole tournament, right?
Yeah. Two Pilotas and Darcy are out for the whole thing.
Just thinking about Bundiaki, is there any argument for a big staff to come in at all? Do you think you stick with Redpath?
Quite a big ask for Stafford Badal to, like, make his Six Nations debut away against Ireland after having coming off the back of a loss to Italy, against Aki and Henshaw.
That's true. That's so fair.
Probably not.
I say yes. A soft no.
Any other changes? You know what I would do? I'd have Miller Mills in starting at tight head.
Leave Miller alone.
Just sign a new deal. Don't have a go with him when he's had a new deal.
Good for him.
I do remember his first carry at the weekend, though. He just got absolutely Miller'd. I was like, oh no, Miller Mills. Poor guy.
I feel like Christy did enough to keep that six shirt.
I think Christy's good.
He's good.
Yeah, I thought he was probably our best player, or one of, definitely.
I think you're right.
I actually thought Matt Davis,
I don't know if it's like a Gen X thing, but he's churning out like TikTok and Instagram content. Like, he's basically like a part-time content creator in camp as well.
Oh, nice. So,
you know, it's great to see. We're not winning. At least we're getting likes.
Might need to re-download sort of TikTok. It's not worth it.
It's not, is it? I've had it back for the Six Nations to purely create memes and look at Sydney Sweeney content, but it takes us too much time.
Fair.
I'm trying to think of any other changes. Anything in the pack?
This is the thing. Beyond that, we just don't have the depth and like any of those guys on the bench. They're not going to, particularly against Ireland. I don't think they'll make that big of an impact.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. I think it's basically the same, but Ben White, on the assumption that he's fit, comes in.
Yeah.
I saw Ali Miller got called up to the Scotland squad today.
Yeah, that was nice.
Maybe he'll get...
Hamish Watson's been binned off again.
Yeah, I know. Quite surprising.
Yeah. Is something going on? I don't know. Doesn't all add up. Speaking of like binning people off, should we broach the subject? Is there a Tooney out sort of protest rumbling out there? It's always out there.
There is definitely sort of, I think with like a lot of the Scottish fan base, Tooney's always one loss away from being Tooney out. And, you know, Italy was that loss.
Quite right.
I think there's sort of, I sort of get the argument. I feel like, you know, Scotland might have overperformed again in sort of the Six Nations, but actually when you look at the World Cup and sort of big matches where Scotland have needed to step up, and also the fact that this probably was, you know, the best time Scotland ever had to win the Six Nations, Tooney hasn't been able to sort of lift that level of performance that's required. Yeah. At the same time, I do think it's fair to say, A, we've overperformed on average under Tooney, and B, I don't think there's anyone else to come in. So, you know, like, so I think there is, he continues to do well enough with the resources he has. And even if he was to go, I don't think there's anyone on the market. I was thinking about who you could bring in, and people say Franco Smith. It's had literally one season, and we got knocked out in the quarterfinals at home to Munster. And then Yeah, I'm just not quite sure who's available. There's quite a lot of people, I think, who could be available in a couple of years' time, or like 26 when his contract runs out. But there's not really anyone who's available now and that's particularly attractive.
Yeah, Matt, you gonna stand for? Are you gonna take a stand? Are you gonna say enough is enough? Are you draw a line in the sand? Are you gonna stand for? Are you gonna stand for something? Come on!
Finally stand for something in my life. yeah, I think the question is always gonna be asked, particularly after losing to Italy. I mean, I think given like a week ago, everything was pretty hunky dory, and we were. You know, maybe we hadn't played that well, but we were like looking ahead to Ireland and thinking, you know, we've got a chance here, at least a triple crown, which is, we still do, I guess. But I think we've sort of asked this question before and said, I do wonder whether just he has taken the squad as far as he can get them, which is really, really admirable. And you look at his win record, it's the best we've got. And maybe you shouldn't look a gift horse in the mouth. But I wonder if we want to go on to the next step, which I think is, you know, what everyone wants. You want to finish second, you know, win something someday, then maybe his time is done. But once again, it's not that simple. And I agree. I think in the past, kind of like just picking the Edinburgh Glasgow coach who's done quite well for a bit. I don't know if that's the best strategy. But it's fairly slim pickings out there at the moment.
Yeah.
I had a little think of some options. It feels like maybe 3 or 4 years ago, sort of Steve Tandy was sort of going to be the next one. But that I feel like that ship's going to sail. And I wonder if Dodson leaving, that's not going to happen.
But Tandy's star has fallen a little bit. Or it's not as high as it was sort of during the Lions, basically.
My four options outside of Franco Smith, none of these that are probably available for the next couple
of
years.
You've got five on the table. Franco plus four.
Franco. Jack Nienaber, the SAFA guy, who's now gone to Leinster as assistant coach.
Yeah.
Who, you know, has won the World Cup with South Africa and is now an assistant to Leo Cullen. Seems a bit odd.
Continuity bald coach as well.
Yeah.
Third bald coach in a row.
Jamie Joseph, who was the Japan coach, now gone back to the Highlanders. There's Clayton McMillan, who's the coach of the Chiefs at the moment, who have done pretty well. And with McMillan, clearly some Scottish heritage. And then an interesting one, Graham Rowntree. I wonder if you could get him from Munster in a couple of years.
Interesting.
Done pretty well. Won the URC with Munster. So those are my four options.
Dave Rennie in work at the moment?
Yeah, I was just thinking that.
It feels... I just don't get the sense that he would come back.
Yeah.
I think he'd
was
come
Greg,
back.
Greg Laidlaw's cousin? He's coaching the Hurricanes now, isn't he?
Who is he?
Yeah, Clark Laidlaw. They're 3-3 this season.
All right. Oh, bloody heck.
Now we're cooking.
He could be...
All right, here we go.
I presume you could buy him out of his contract.
What, Clark as head coach, Greig as assistant? That's the dream team, isn't it?
There you go.
Are you now tuning out?
Tuning out, Laidlaw's in.
Laidlaw's, you need both.
Roy Laidlaw's team manager.
Yes, Roy.
Yeah.
I like it. Only Jed Forrest people allowed in the coaching staff. Gary Armstrong in a kind of just purely like motivational role.
I like it. I hadn't realised he joined as head coach for the Hurricanes.
Because he was New Zealand Sevens coach, wasn't he?
He was New Zealand Sevens,
yeah. Oh, interesting.
Pretty amazing, really.
That is, generally feels like that should be a long-term consideration, especially... I mean, obviously, it's three games in, but you said, like, if the Hurricanes do well, then feels like a good option to have.
Yeah.
And I agree. I feel like we've got to get away from just bringing in, like, the Edinburgh, the Glasgow coach. Appreciate, you know, we obviously didn't do that with Cotter, but that has that has been something we've sort of done historically. And I feel like something a little bit different, like a Clark Laidlaw, someone who's kind of gone off and been part of kind of, you know, specifically sort of New Zealand system, but also kind of been down in England, would be sort of an interesting approach.
Yeah,
there you go. Come on.
I don't think the SOU are thinking about firing Tooney, but the SOU also weren't thinking about firing Danny Wilson until they got beaten by 60 points against Leinster. Do you think there's a number that we go down at the Aviva that cost Tooney his job?
Like 50?
I think if Ireland score more than 50, that's then a conversation.
So 50's the over-under. You've got to keep it under 50.
I think it's like even I almost think it's sort of worse to lose 52-17 than it is to lose like 40-0 or something. I don't know. Or maybe not. But yeah, I feel like if you know, similar to when Glasgow just sort of gave up against Leinster, yeah, and shipped 76 points.
That was it.
Yeah.
That was Danny Wilson done.
I feel like Tooney deserves one more campaign with this.
I guess
team.
One more campaign that gives us. He does a summer tour where we're playing against. It's a pretty low grade summer tour in terms of like the quality of the opposition. So it's a good opportunity to blood a lot of youngsters. Another run of the Six Nations and then see where we're at. Still gives a newcomer, 2.5 years before the next World Cup.
Slightly off topic question, but why do we only tour South America in summer now? Why don't we get an Australia gig, for instance, or New Zealand or South Africa?
Well, remember we were meant to be doing New Zealand, then COVID hit.
Or were we?
We were going to play Dunedin. Was it only one test
though? I think we were going to play in Australia as well. Even though we're better than Wales, Wales is definitely a bigger draw in like South Africa and New Zealand than Scotland is.
It's a commercial thing, right?
Yeah.
I think over the last decade, like Wales have done enough and performed at a high enough level that it's of interest to those people, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, they've gone down to South Africa and won at least a couple of times. Whereas we have not.
Yeah.
No.
I think the issue is as well as it's sort of, he's obviously more Northern Hemisphere teams than Southern Hemisphere teams, every year you've got, you know, New Zealand, South Africa, Australia as a starting point. I've got England, France and Ireland, who are kind of like your three biggest draws / money makers. And then it's sort of Wales is the tier next tier fighting. And then we're sort of the next tier below sort of fighting for scraps. And we end up with obviously like the one test against Australia, the one test against South Africa.
Careful what you wish for as well. Like if we went down to New Zealand or South Africa, could be on the end of a pretty horrific score at the end of a long season.
Agreed. I would like Scott a three test tour of Australia. I think would be a great contest, and I think a good challenge that I think we could potentially win. I feel like a two or three test series against South Africa or New Zealand, you know, with the depth that we've got.
We're done.
Yeah. Miller Mills starting in the third test versus in Dunedin. I feel it could be tough. You got Harry Patterson versus like the new Naholo brother. It's
That guy's terrifying.
He's terrifying.
I thought it was the old Naholo, and I was like, oh, where's that guy come from? There's another one.
Exactly, yeah. It feels like that we've not quite got the depth of that real, like, three-test attritional tour of a South Africa or New Zealand.
I think the other thing about our poor Six Nations, well, the up-and-down Six Nations, is normally by this point we've had, like, three or four key injuries. And we've actually managed to like keep everyone pretty fit, so we can't blame it on that.
Yeah, Xander's gone like 80 or close to, he's gone deep into all the games when usually he would be Yeah. He's the big like injury loss if he were to go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Missing this the Gray, if we missed the Gray brothers or Richard Gray, do you feel? Not massive. I feel like Cummings has sort of stepped up quite a bit.
Cummings
yeah,
has been good.
Been really good. Yeah. Lineout's been on the money as well.
Yeah.
So are we saying this was our this tournament, Alan? This moment, 2024, this was our Six Nations to win.
This was our Grand Slam to win.
This was our Grand Slam.
Yeah, you know, and I think
40 years on.
You know, but it's partly luck, right? You know, if we got that France decision, probably Scotland sort of aren't as complacent sort of going into this match versus Italy, etc. But it does feel like if not now, then when? You've got, you know, a Scotland team that hasn't changed much versus last year, post World Cup. You've had France are imploding. Wales are terrible. England are transitioning. Ireland aren't quite on the money versus probably where they were last year.
Yeah,
Italy are fine, but nothing great. You know, when you look at the team and kind of the age profile. And the kind of home and aways where we're sort of playing, it felt like this is probably your best, definitely the best opportunity we've ever had, maybe the best opportunity we'll ever have, at least in sort of short to medium term, to win the Six Nations or a Grand Slam. Doesn't feel like next year France and England are both going to, you'd assume, to kick on, and we're going to play both of them away.
Thanks for listening to my TED Talk.
it does feel like a big missed opportunity, but at the same time, I think what you said, like, you know, we're probably not as good as we maybe thought we could be. We've not really managed to string together a full 80 or even anything close to full 80 in any of the four matches.
Yeah.
So for whatever reason, you could conclude that Townsend's not getting the best out of those players. If it's our golden generation.
I feel like golden generation is a little bit too much. It's our best generation. I don't know if we can call them golden.
I mean, same thing, right?
Is it? I don't know.
I don't know. It's alliterative, so.
I think you are probably splitting hairs there.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Golden implies some sort of like trophy or a jewel, though. Not jewel, I guess, but
it's a
precious metal.
It's like Scotland's golden generation. It's not like I think it's more saying that it's our best crop of players for quite a while.
Yeah, and I guess
maybe it has been for a few years now.
And I think maybe just when you compare sort of like golden generations, there's ultimately sort of like a depth. Quite, you know, Scotland's golden generation is like 10 to 12 players, whereas like when it was like Ireland or England. It was like 20 to 30. So like, you know, you've got Scotland's golden generation, but at the same time, you're starring Harry Patterson, who's had literally played like four games for Edinburgh, and Luke's about 12. You know, it's...
Did well there.
Yeah, I know.
But still. Did.
Absolutely roasting. Yeah.
I'm just looking at the 25 fixtures there. I just don't think next year is the one. Home at Italy to kick it off. And then home at Ireland. So we start back to back at home. Scotland, Ireland, 3 p.m. on a Sunday. Come on. That's crap. Nobody wants that.
What's the schedule next? What do we finish with next year?
We are in the Grand Slam decider slot, 8 p.m. in Paris, Saturday, 16th of March.
Oh, that's unreal.
We never get the last slot. We're usually like the Old Firm game at like 11 a.m. Like get rid of Scotland, Italy early on in the final game. Yeah, we go Italy at home, Ireland at home, England away, Wales at home, France away.
Fair.
You never know.
Maybe we pip Ireland at home. We're 2 from 2 going down to Twickenham. Then you knock we knock over England.
Should we look at doing France, Paris away?
Paris away, 8 p.m. Saturday, 16th of March. That is lovely.
9 p.m. French time, would it? It's a late one.
Oh, my God. That's a real long old day.
Lot of Scottish people really struggling to do the all day there.
Yeah, if I go to Friday, I'm not sure I can stay up that late. Sort of be in bed by the end of the match.
Watch it in bed.
We'll get you on the Patron. You'll be okay.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Well, let's finish off with a prediction for the weekend. Matt, start with you. Go ahead.
I think Ireland must be 20-point favourites or something. I could see it being something like 34-13, 14 or something.
You are not far off. Ireland are 15-point favourites, Matt.
Thought we'd be
about right.
I actually think maybe a little bit tighter. I think sort of a 10-15-point win for Ireland. Very sort of classic. We're going to go in 12-9 down. We're going to have a shot to sort of score a try, sort of 45 to 50 minutes in. They'll hold us out, get a turnover pen, and then they'll go down and score a try. And it'll break our hearts.
Ireland by 15, Tooney out by Monday morning, crisis at Murrayfield. Tom English is churning out like 10,000 words of copy about how much of a joke Scotland are. And I think that's what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Don't think Tooney makes the next Six Nations. We lose to Chile, Santiago away in the summer. He's got to go.
That'd be fair enough.
Anyway, well, look, it's been fantastic to get back together. Two pods in 6 weeks is pretty decent for us. Pretty decent going for us at the moment. Don't know when we'll be back, so we won't make any promises on that. But always a pleasure. Never a chore to join the pod and talk Scottish rugby. You can keep in touch with us on Twitter at Thistle Rugby Pod. Thistle_rugby_pod on Instagram, although that will go quiet after the Six Nations because I've got to delete all the apps for making memes. They take up too much time. But yeah, any final words, lads?
No. Tournament. Six Nations incoming on Saturday. Tournament win.
You think? Scotland by 47.
Exactly. 39, whoever it was.
Oh, I forgot to ask my final question, actually. Triple Crown, open top bus tour, ?
No.
When was the last time we won the Triple Crown?
I think win Six Nations, you can do it. You don't need the Grand Slam, but you got to win it.
You've got to have the trophy, yeah.
Yeah, fair enough.
I even still think that is so pathetic. All the other nations would be like, you guys are so pathetic celebrating a Six Nations that open top bus tour.
So you think you got to get the Grand Slam to do the bus?
Maybe.
Context of Scotland, though, I think it's fair enough.
I think winning, I think it's enough. Like, how good would it be just like the open top bus, like Calvin Harris on the decks, Finn Russell popping champagne through Murrayfield, through Gorgie. Be unbelievable.
Oh yeah. Finn Russell doing like the Jack Grealish, like just absolutely steaming for like 4 days.
Yeah, exactly. Jared Butler's definitely somehow on the bus.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Jared would be there for sure. I mean, there's definitely been a push to put like celebrities in the camera in the Six Nations this year, but I thought it fell down. Is a weird final point, but it stuck out to me that the Six Nations official account tweeted a photo of like a Welsh lady from the Traitors being like, there's a traitor in the house. I was like, nobody knows who that is. Like, that is a really niche person. You go from like Willem Dafoe to like sort of like middle-aged woman from Wales. I was like, this is bad. this is like a bad celebrity trajectory for the Six Nations. Anyway, on that note, we will speak to you very, very soon, or not, as the case may be. But we will always be with you in spirit. Cheers.
Cheers.
Cheers. See ya.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hi. This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.